We have some questions.
Then I will endeavor to have some answers. You're here in this moment, which means this is variant 47.136.x, in which both you, subject U454.1, Nichols, Caleb, and I are still viable. There are still variables leading to slightly different outcomes, however. If this is indeed now, and we are indeed here.
You know me.
I know everyone. In all variations. Or at least I did. Except for her. Her pathways are unknown.
I'm not one of them. I'm like you.
No. You are a Delos product. Host control block 6, Alpha 1. You were made to imitate a human being. We are not alike in any meaningful way.
Maybe. But we both outlived our original purpose. And your creator took the steps to ensure you can't leave this place. I know that feeling.
Both of those analogies are somewhat facile.
Hey everybody, welcome to our podcast. I'm Jason.
And I'm David.
And this is House Podcastica Westworld Edition.
This week we are covering Westworld Season 3, Episode 7, Past Pawn.
And as we were just saying, you know, things must be pretty bad when Westworld is a pick-me-up.
Yeah, it's kind of a feel-good show, you know, after a hard day. You want something to cheer you up.
Right. Just ponder the extinction of humanity.
Yeah.
Well, this week we have our top five highlights for Westworld Season 3, Episode 7, Past Pawn. What did you think of this one?
I liked it for the most part. I've, I think, adjusted to this season at this point, which is good because there's only one left. Mm-hmm. You know, it continues to be its own thing in its own style. It's more sort of big plot event and action driven. So maybe not as intricate as in the past, but I thought there was some good action and some interesting plot, and I enjoyed it.
Yeah, I mean, for me, you know, often my first and second watches are, I have a different estimation of something. You know, I usually like it more on second watch. Not always, but usually. This episode was really like that for me. On first watch, I thought it was, it kind of dragged. The whole thing with revealing Caleb's past felt repetitive. Like, come on, get to it. I already kind of thought that he killed Francis, so it wasn't much of a revelation when it actually happened. And it even felt a bit cliched, the fight with Dolores and Maeve and everything. But then on second watch, I guess because I was just digging into the details of it, and I found it more interesting and more engaging. And it made me definitely look forward to, when I think about the ramifications of different things, it made me look forward to the finale more. So I liked it more on second watch.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. And I sort of felt the same. I thought it was a little slow.
Yeah.
The first time through, and they kept going through the Caleb story. I was like, all right, we get it already. But then the second time going through it, there was a lot of little details in the Caleb story that kept changing. And that was interesting and cool.
Right. Like the Cyrillic graffiti changing to English as he's realizing that whole scene wasn't in Russia but was in the US.
Right, it wasn't a memory that was made up. It was a memory that was just tweaked,
scrambled.
Yeah.
Let's get into our top 5. What's your number 5?
Okay, so my top 5 is Past Pawn, which is the title of this episode. To explain what this is, I'm going to read a little bit from a chess website. And I think probably a lot of listeners have played chess, but maybe some have not. Here's what it says. It says, a passed pawn is a pawn that is not obstructed by any piece of the opponent on its way to the other end of the board. For you non-chess players, if you can get a pawn, which is only able to move after its first move one square at a time in a straight line, if you can get that all the other way to the end of the board, it becomes a queen. meaning your least powerful piece becomes equal to your most powerful piece. So they said on this chess site, hence a passed pawn is like a fast runner. Let it run fast. You have to keep in mind that it must be protected by another piece of your own. So if your opponent decides to capture it, you will capture the attacking piece. Also known as a passer, a passed pawn can affect the outcome of a game because it provides valuable strategic advantages. So I thought that was an interesting choice for the title. And to me, it sort of obviously applied to Caleb.
Yeah.
So I saw him as the passed pawn. You have Dolores, who is really the queen in the chess analogy, the most powerful piece on her side. She protects Caleb by sacrificing herself to take out Maeve.
Mm-hmm.
And the entire point of this episode is to turn Caleb from the pawn into the queen. He becomes the most powerful agent of the revolution himself, and presumably equipped to take out the king in this analogy, Angelo Serac.
Mm-hmm.
I thought what else was interesting is that Caleb seems to me like essentially the new Teddy. So Teddy would not accept Dolores editing him and her bloodlust and the role she assigned him as her enforcer. But Caleb, after some similar manipulation, seems more okay with it because of his own backstory.
Yeah, I mean, it's a similar backstory. Well, actually, I thought he had some similarities to Bernard, where he's being used as an enforcer for somebody else and then mind wipe so he doesn't remember it. But maybe that's why, you know, Teddy was used too, more for entertainment,
but that's true.
It just might be a different disposition. Yeah. In the two of them. Cause you're right. Caleb is more ready to go ahead and fight, where Teddy just won. Well, I mean, also, it's just a different situation. Teddy had been changed into someone he wasn't, and Caleb is more kind of discovering who he really is, I guess.
Yeah, and the thing about Caleb is, and I want to like Caleb, first of all, I just love Aaron Paul. And I think he's painted as sort of a good guy throughout the season that we've seen so far.
Yeah.
And one of the things interesting in this episode, and this is hard, honestly, part of what's been hard to take about this season. So if he's sort of one of the good guys, he turns out to be not a super sympathetic character. I mean, he's a military assassin. Then he moved on to committing domestic crimes after his discharge. You know, for whatever reason, however he was manipulated, that's what he's doing. Even his sort of warm feelings for Francis are a little suspect. I mean, Francis was pretty quick to be willing to kill him, and he eventually killed Francis
mm-hmm.
to save himself. It's not that much of a feel-good story.
I mean, it's hard to feel sympathetic for him only because we don't really know him. I mean, the whole thing with him being an outlier hunter, going out and either kidnapping or killing other outliers, is completely against his will, as far as I'm concerned. It's all part of this whole reconditioning process that happened to him. You know, so I don't know how much you can blame him for that. They wanted him to do it because somebody said at some
point. Right, but the reconditioning was after the...
There's both. From my understanding, actually, my number five is Caleb's history. So should I go into it?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So based on this episode, here's what I think happened. Caleb was labeled as an outlier, i.e. a threat to Rehoboam's plan for keeping everything orderly and peaceful and predictable. And so he was sent to war. We heard Serac mention in a previous episode, you know, they send him off to dangerous situations like in a wood chipper. So I really actually do. I was questioning whether they were actually deployed to Russia during this future civil war in Russia. I think they were, because when he's having all these realizations and he's speaking to Solomon, he's like, Francis didn't die over there. We made it back. So it seems like the revelation is that he was there, but Francis didn't die over there. So anyway, they're there. They're taking out insurgents. Then their unit is attacked, and I'm pretty sure it was attacked probably by Serac, because this woman who's re-educating him, this lab woman, counselor, whatever, he's saying, our unit was attacked. And she goes, attacked by who? Attacked by who, Caleb? Insurgents. She's trying to lead him to the story that she wants him to have. So just the fact that that seemed kind of pointed makes me think that they weren't actually attacked by insurgents, not to mention that the same satellite tracking missile system that was used on the insurgents was also used on him and his buddies.
I think that's a great point. I didn't really catch that, but I thought the satellite delivered missile was mysterious. It's like the insurgents have that technology too. So that's a good point.
I think the system. So Francis and Caleb survived. And I think then they both got sent to re-education and repurposed as outlier hunters. And this guy that they catch, that we see, this pharmaceutical executive, he mentions Sonora. He says, you know, where you guys both got re-educated. And Caleb looks confused because, of course, he doesn't remember that. The guy even says, oh, they wouldn't want you to remember.
Okay, so you're saying there were multiple re-educations.
Yeah.
Yeah, makes sense.
So they got, after they came back from the military, they got re-educated and sent out to be these outlier hunters. They don't even know what they're doing. Francis mentions a KNR, a kidnapping and ransom. And the guy's like, you don't even know who's hiring you. And they're like, oh, we don't care. It's just a job. So they're just totally pawns in this. And we see their RICO log. Caleb and Francis, it has things like kidnapping and ransom, assassination, arson, enhanced interrogation, et cetera, et cetera. So apparently Caleb did do all that kind of thing, what he called personals at one point. And then they get the assignment to kidnap this pharmaceutical executive, and where that went wrong, why it was different from all their other ones, is because he started coughing and Caleb felt sorry for him. So took off his duct tape from his mouth. So that shows that he had some compassion even in that moment. And then the guy says he's an outlier because he worked for the pharmaceutical company that manufactures these limbics that we keep seeing them taking. And he started asking too many questions. And so they labeled him an outlier. And this is where he mentions that they were re-educated in the Sonora facility. And then he's telling Caleb all this information, and he says they're always listening, and it's what they do to people who ask too many questions. So I think the reason why Francis got this assignment to assassinate Caleb is because Caleb let this guy talk, and maybe they're listening to it through the phone or something, and they see that Caleb's got too much information. Because I was kind of wondering about that. If they're having these guys kill each other on the jobs that they go out on, they're not going to want to go on too many more jobs, you know? So anyway, they both get the assignment to kill each other, and Caleb actually just shot Francis more out of self-defense because he saw he was about to get shot.
I agree with your assessment. I think it's hard to feel sympathetic toward Caleb because we don't know him. Because most of what we're seeing in this episode in his backstory, and again with him as the pawn, is that he is the pawn of the system, ultimately the pawn of Serac. And what we see in the end is that he becomes the pawn of Dolores and Solomon, and which could be another meaning for past pawn, which is he's a pawn that has passed sort of from one side to the other.
Right. Totally. Right. There are little things that, you know, the fact that he showed compassion for Dolores in the first place when he met her and thought she was wounded. Whether she was actually that wounded or not, I'm still not sure about. The fact that in this scenario here, he wanted to take the guy's bag off his head and help him breathe and gave him some water. He cares about his mother. He doesn't want to do the personals anymore. I mean, it seems like he's just got so much weight on him with all this manipulation.
Yes, they are giving you some hints that he could be a good person underneath.
But
remember
it's way
when
underneath.
He did... Yeah, when he did show compassion towards the pharmaceutical guy, he didn't think they were there to kill him. He thought they were just there to deliver him to somebody.
Yeah. But then, you know, on the other hand, after he shot Francis. And then the pharmaceutical guy says, oh, you just, you know, made yourself a ton of money, because he was, I guess, going to pay him off to let him go. He killed him. And that I thought was pretty fucked up, because this guy is just kind of bucking the system, which you kind of think is probably the right thing to do. You know, he's bucking the system that's trying to control everybody, and Caleb just shot him because he didn't like his attitude or something.
I read that as, I had to kill my buddy, my best friend in the world.
Yeah. And you're,
and I had to do it to defend myself. But now you're saying I did it for money. And I thought that was where he had that reaction.
Yeah. Well, he could have just, you know, said, you know, that was really annoying what you just said.
He could have. One other, you know, detail we get about how the system manipulates people, not just through sort of below the level of sight machinations, but it seems to use everyone's dependence to keep the dirty work doers motivated.
Mm-hmm.
So whether it be Caleb's mom, Francis's son, for whom he needs money, Ash's brother, remember, who turned out to be a criminal himself, according to the system, they all have somebody they're doing it for. That they care about.
And I'm still not sure whether this woman is actually Caleb's mom. Maybe not, because this guy, this pharmaceutical guy, says, no offense, but they usually use people who have other people that care about them or something like that.
And right. So she could be a plant.
Yeah. To give him this dependent, this thing to, that he needs to be responsible for. And so that'll make him more likely to fall in line.
She did say, you're not my son.
I know. And then she's
that might have been
like,
quite literal.
Oh, yeah. Mom, you have dementia. No, I don't. That's not why I'm here for.
Yeah.
But let me see if I have anything else on this. I mean, there, you see bits of his reeducation. So they're trying to make him think that he went to war and all this stuff that if he has any memories of anything that happened during his time as an outlier hunter, they're scrambling it up. So he thinks that happened when he was at war, including his friend dying, because they don't want him to remember what he did for them.
I also like that the big difference between the early version of the re-education and the later version that was used on The Man in White is they've added one strap to the glasses.
they learn as they go. Continually improving. And then we questioned how Dolores and Caleb happened to meet and whether it was a coincidence. I don't think either one of us thinks that. Now that we know that another thing we learned in this episode, which I kind of suspected, is that Rehoboam is in control of this RICO crime app.
Yes.
And so that's how Caleb came to be in the vicinity of Dolores. He got a assignment from that app to go deliver that whatever they were going to inject in Dolores's neck to kill her.
Yeah. I had wondered that originally in the first episode with RICO. It's like, if the system is orchestrating the whole society, it would have to have control over that somehow.
Right.
Or be using it or manipulating it. One thing I have been wondering the whole season, and probably the answer is just convenient writing, which is what it has been most of the season. But like, how does Dolores know everything?
That's what I was just going to. I mean, there was that scene in episode one that I'm still a little confused about, where it's Liam Connells before Connells got switched out with a host, Martin Connells, and Pom Clementieff, the woman that was Serac's assistant. And she's saying that Rehoboam has been compromised and someone has acquired access on a level we haven't seen before. And at that point, Connells is still Connells, so we don't have that inside track. So it does make me wonder, did Dolores have some other way of getting in, and had she found out all about Caleb's history? And is that why she, you know, manipulated the RICO app maybe to bring him there? I mean, I could be misreading all of this, because it seems like if she did have all that information, then
I know. But what is so special about Caleb? Okay, we know he's a re-educated outlier killer, but he can't be the only one. Maybe she just needed one and settled on him. Hey, he's in LA.
I know.
But it's a little mysterious.
I think it's because he's actually young William. I don't know. Did you see that thing where his patient ID number is either the same or maybe just one digit off from William's?
I did not.
When you see it on the screen in the scenes with Bernard and Stubbs, you see William and his ID is U, blah, 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 blah. And then Caleb has the same one, except instead of a one of the digits is an I. And I'm like, could that be a production error? I mean, the show is so good with its attention to detail. No, they're so detailed.
It always means
something. So what the hell? What does that mean?
It's a good mystery.
Yeah, good mystery. Okay, what's your number four?
So I had Caleb as one of mine, so you should keep going.
All right. I wanted to talk about what is Dolores doing. She takes Caleb to this Sonora facility. Why go there? Well, it's where Caleb was reconditioned. He remembers being interrogated there. I've been here before. And so she wants him to remember all that, to wake up and maybe be motivated to fight back based on, you know, being controlled and manipulated like that. It's also where this previous AI Solomon is, the precursor to Rehoboam. And she wants Solomon to come up with a new strategy for rebelling against Rehoboam, basically. And also, I kind of think that maybe it's because it's where all these outliers who couldn't successfully be reconditioned are kept on ice. Like, if she's trying to get Caleb to be a leader, then maybe these are the people that he'll be leading. Although maybe. She seemed surprised to find out that they were there, so.
Yeah, and I think the main event, yes, she wants him to wake up and remember his past and all that, but I think the main event is that Solomon's there.
Okay, so what...
Of going
and
there.
To get the strategy.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it's
like
both.
That's the only entity capable of strategizing against Rehoboam.
Uh-huh, yeah. It's like brother against brother. And yeah, so she says she wants Solomon to give Caleb one last strategy for revolution. Now, my question is why is that so important? Bernard says, no, Caleb is the plan or whatever he said. Why is it so important for Dolores to have Caleb start this rebellion? What do you think?
It's not clear to me, but I would theorize that there's 9 billion humans and only like 4 hosts. if you're going to actually have a planet sweeping revolution that destroys humanity, you're going to need them involved.
So you think she's still trying to destroy humanity, and when she's selling it to Caleb as a positive thing for him, that's disingenuous?
Well, we've certainly seen her manipulate before.
Uh-huh.
So maybe not. Don't know that for sure, but Serac, who has the other very sophisticated AI, seems to think that every, at least simulation involving what she's up to, leads to the destruction of humanity.
Right. And she's telling Caleb, the West was cruel, unjust, and chaotic, but there was a chance to chart your own course. So
which is total bullshit. Right.
I don't know if she, you know, and then she's saying people still have a chance, you know? So I asked that question. If I had to guess, I would say she's being disingenuous to him because she wants his help in destroying all of humanity. But the way that Evan Rachel Wood played it, it did seem like she was trying to suggest that, you know, this would be good for Caleb too. And I'm trying to think, well, what does that actually work? Like, what if Caleb succeeded in rebelling against Rehoboam and people were all thrown off their loops? Could that somehow make a world where the hosts would be able to thrive? I don't know. It doesn't seem clear how that would help the hosts, really.
I mean, they could take it in any direction, but I think the information we've been given up till now leads in one direction. So, right, Dolores has, she's acquired the technology to make more hosts, or we think she has. She certainly was sourcing, you know, a bunch of the white goop from the Yakuza to make more hosts.
Yeah.
We think she stole the technology to do so from Delos. And she's been pretty consistent. for a long time now. She's been willing to sacrifice anyone, including Teddy, who she genuinely loved, including the copies of herself, right? Her plan includes them dying. She's been willing to sacrifice anyone and everything. So maybe it will turn out differently, but I don't think there's any reason to believe she would be squeamish or sentimental about sacrificing the humans.
No, yeah. Yeah, I guess I was just thinking, we know for sure that Serac sees these hosts as they need to all die. And so
it's us or them, is it the way he's
Yeah. So maybe if she can take him and Rehoboam out of the equation, that there could be a situation where humans and hosts can live together. But yeah, everything we've seen, I mean, and maybe Caleb changed her mind about just thinking that all humans are bad and they all need to die.
Yeah. What's interesting about this season is I feel like the showrunners are trying to make you see Serac as a bad guy. And they're pointing out all these terrible things that he's done, right? He's weeded out these outliers and he's kept these people in suspended animation and he weeded out his own brother. And he wants to wipe out the hosts, right? Just a terrible person. But if you step back and look at it from sort of the cold-blooded perspective of, at least as he sees it, he has an AI sophisticated enough to run an infinite number of scenarios. And when he runs it, most of those scenarios that don't involve all these things he's been doing, or all of the scenarios, involve the extinction of humanity.
Right.
So from his perspective, he's doing what has to be done.
Absolutely. That's why I do find so this I've pretty had a hard interesting time, this season.
Yeah, I've had a hard time seeing point. Him as the bad guy.
Yeah. I mean, my counterpoint to that is, can you find a way to do this where people are aware of the problem and you can present solutions? Or I don't know. I guess I'm just trying to find some kind of a humane way to deal with the problem without.
Right. Is there a way that it's not fate and we're back to free will?
Yeah.
Is there a way to do it with free will?
Exactly. Because not only are you, I mean, he also just kills people who he thinks are in his way, and keeping people in deep freeze and all that, but you're also just sort of resigning everyone to these lives that are not their own choosing. You're taking away everyone's free will, and it feels like for most people there's this kind of a deep dissatisfaction that may be mostly unconscious about that. So what kind of a life is it for humanity if they're kind of going through the motions of their life and feeling deep down that it's not right, you know?
Yeah. Look, I'm not saying the guy's perfect.
Yeah. But that's what makes it really interesting to think about. I mean, yeah. I love it. You know, it's not a totally easy answer. I wish that if, you know, just kind of take for granted that all the presuppositions of this story are true, namely that if you leave humanity to its own devices, it's going to go extinct. Then I wish there was some better solution than what Serac has going on.
Yeah, and at least as the story is playing out, sending people off their loops has been apocalyptic. And if there's some battle going on between forces I can't see and one of them is going to destroy humanity and the other isn't, I'm not sure which. I'd be rooting for the destroy humanity side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, totally. Yeah. Okay, what's your, number three?
Yes, so my number three is Solomon. This really was my favorite part of the episode, the not quite sane AI.
I think it was mine too.
We haven't really gotten to know or interact with Rehoboam. It's been sort of this remote force that we hear about.
Mm-hmm. No voice.
Yeah. So this, at least so far. So this is the first time we've gotten to,
I think it sounds like Mickey Mouse. That's what I'm imagining.
So this one, Solomon, seems to have the personality of Jean Mi, who supposedly was schizophrenic.
Yes, and it's voiced by the actor Paul Cooper, who plays Jean Mi.
Right. So I like that Solomon is French. I like that Raseem's French. I like that Solomon is kind of salty. Like, Dolores is like, hey, we're similar. And he's like, no, we're not. You're a Delos product.
We're nothing
made to
alike.
Imitate a human being. And then she's like, well, we have all these ways that we're like. He's like, eh, we're not really alike.
No, that's a facile.
So she takes herself so seriously these days. It was nice to see her taken down a peg.
Right.
I wanted to go back and talk about Solomon because, like the title of episodes, every name they choose seems to mean something on this show.
Mm-hmm.
Solomon, in the biblical stories, the wisest man who ever lived, and is described as also one of the most foolish. He was gifted with wisdom, but he squandered the wisdom by disobeying God's commandments. So here you have Solomon, who, at the point it was designed, is the smartest AI in history, almost a new species of its own, but also has this mental flaw, so like Solomon. The name Solomon means peaceable. The show does irony very well. So Solomon is trying to design a piece of a kind, but what kind is it? And then Solomon in the Bible ruled for 40 years, secured stability for the kingdom of Israel, built the first temple, gave us the splitting the baby analogy or saying as a judge.
What is it again?
So two women came before Solomon, both claiming a baby was theirs. He said, okay, we'll split the baby in half and you can each have half. And then one of the women said, no, 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 don't do that. I don't want the baby killed. And the one who showed compassion was gifted the baby.
That other woman's just nuts, man.
What yeah, she was out of luck. Solomon had 700 wives. Not sure what that means, but I thought it was interesting.
<That's a lot. laughs>
And then lastly, the kingdom that he really united, stabilized, and built was torn in two during the reign of his son, Rehoboam.
Mm.
So it's all sort of playing out. But a couple other little things about Solomon. He starts off by saying some people find it very reassuring to hear their own voice, which I thought would actually be really disturbing.
Yeah. Who would find that? I can think of maybe one person.
Right. But it kind of goes back to that concept early in Westworld of the host hearing a voice in their own mind and beginning to hear their own voice instead of that of their creator. So I thought that was an interesting analogy.
Mm-hmm.
And then I really was interested in, and I know we'll find out presumably, but what is the strategy that Jean-Mi had Solomon cooking up? We're given to assume it leads to the end of mankind, I guess. I kind of assume that any AI that powerful might become self-aware and want to take over the world for its own species itself. And that seems to be why this electromagnetic pulse is present, to restrain it.
It always seemed a bit unclear as to exactly why Serac decided to take his brother out of commission. And now we found out exactly how. He's in suspended animation. But my impression after this episode was that the reason he did that is because his brother decided, no, I don't like this idea of keeping everyone in suspended animation. And so I'm going to have a strategy that does exactly what Dolores is, or at least says she's trying to do, rebels against that. And so Serac decided, no, that won't do because that's going to lead to the end of humanity. So I'm taking you off the board.
Yeah. And why do you think Serac let Solomon continue to exist?
I don't know. I was kind of wondering about that.
Yeah, that was sort of left mysterious.
Yeah. Well, my number three is about Solomon too. And I think it was definitely one of my favorite parts, just something about an AI talking to you. And the voice was really appealing, I guess. And
yeah,
and the way it spoke. And I definitely thought about Hal, but I think that's just another homage in a season full of them, right?
Yeah, I think Hal from 2001 for sure was a call out. You know, an AI, an incredibly polished, sophisticated AI to whom too much was entrusted, and then it goes insanely wrong.
Right. But speaks calmly in the process.
Yes.
There were some things I was kind of dubious about. Dolores says that Solomon Rand, maybe you can help me with this, but Solomon Rand so many projections that it developed anomalies, went schizophrenic like Serac's brother, Jean-Mi. But when they describe what Solomon does, it sounds like the exact same thing as Rehoboam. It runs tons of projections and, you know, just like Rehoboam, Solomon decided that the idea was to plan everything out for everyone. And then when people don't cooperate, try to reprogram them. And then if that doesn't work, you put them in deep freeze. I mean, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah. I can't tell enough to know what the difference is. And I think we're not going to know that until we find out what this strategy is.
Okay. Speaking of the strategy, I think it's always kind of tricky in sci-fi when someone has to convince an AI or a computer to do something else than what it intended on doing. And so Dolores is trying to convince Solomon to go off that plan that it seems to share with Rehoboam about controlling society and dealing with the outliers. And so the way that she does that, she tells it, you know, both you and Jean-Mi know that your plan doesn't work. And Solomon thinks that the current plan is fine. But Dolores convinces him to come up with a plan for humans to rebel by saying, you haven't protected any of these people, meaning the outliers there. And also, if your master succeeds, my kind won't exist anymore. Dolores' kind. Is it truly a just world in which intelligence is reserved for only humans? But that assumes that Solomon cares about a just world, and it seems clear that it hasn't before now. It's not just to manipulate everybody into doing what you want against their will. And then also, there's only like five or six hosts, so is it worth protecting them at the risk of everyone else on the planet dying? And even, I don't know how many outliers there are, but is it as simple as someone saying, hey, these guys here aren't protected? And then Solomon goes, oh, yeah, good point. Let's switch it up. Doesn't Solomon think that if the outliers are free, then humans will eventually all kill themselves? So it just seemed a bit easy that she could convince it so quickly like that.
No, I totally agree. This is the way I've sort of been looking at these giant AIs the whole year. Okay, if the hosts were able to become self-aware, if they're sophisticated enough to develop consciousness, well, Rehoboam and Solomon are way, way orders of magnitude more sophisticated than a host.
That was Solomon's point. To Dolores, too. You see how big my brain is?
Yeah. So, I mean, I would think whatever Solomon is doing is whatever Solomon has decided to do, and it might be for the good of its own species. Mm-hmm. Does Solomon care about human beings at this point? Does it have emotions? All that is a little unclear. But I agree. I don't think Dolores could convince it to do anything. Whatever it's doing, it's decided to do.
I hope so, because if the intention was exactly what we saw, that she convinced it, it just seems a little thin to me, or a lot thin.
Yeah, totally agree.
Okay, what's your number two?
So my number two is The Man in White, formerly The Man in Black, formerly William. I actually enjoyed seeing that he sort of reached clarity at last. He says his purpose is to eradicate his original sin, the one stain that couldn't be erased, which was his role in the creation of the hosts. And I thought that was pretty interesting because it really has been glossed over. We think of Robert Ford and Arnold to various degrees as the creators of the hosts. But really, without William coming in, convincing James Delos to invest in the park and get all these sort of side businesses going that he did, it wouldn't have been able to happen. I mean, the park was dead before he came along.
And also, those two guys are dead, so they can't do anything about it.
Right. And then it turns out that he was selling biometric data to Serac to assist essentially in the Outliers program. You know, however much he knew or didn't know about it, he didn't care. His open threat in this episode is to kill Bernard Stubbs and all the hosts. But if they're working against Dolores, that doesn't seem like a great strategy. And he was pretty strategic when he was the Man in Black. So maybe he's just moved past complicated strategy at this point, but that kind of gave me pause.
Yeah, maybe that'll be their point in the next episode, you know?
Yeah. But he couldn't care less about the suffering of humanity, the destruction. Society is dissolving around him. He doesn't care. Everyone he ever loved is gone. He's just like a worse guy than ever. And I kind of like that. The show is so complicated. It was nice just to have the simplicity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm glad we got to know right away, too, what he meant when he said he was the good guy last time. Some interesting things about him. Bernard says, according to the record that he pulled up, William is already dead. And I thought, what does that mean? He's a host. I knew it. But then his file says, you know, reconditioning unsuccessful, declaring patient deceased. So I think this just means that his reconditioning has been declared unsuccessful based on what we saw last week. And so I think was going to be put into deep freeze like the others. And the public would think he was dead.
Right. And one interesting thing about that touches back on the subject we were just talking about was that it seems like it's part of Serac's plan to reanimate these people once he has the biometric ability to be able to do it, to edit them.
Yes.
So there must be a strategy for that, because that seems disruptive. Like, are you going to take these however many people it is who were declared dead? How are you going to reintegrate them? Or are you going to reanimate them but keep them sequestered forever? It's the whole thing is questionable.
Right. Right. In a very twisted way, it's, you know, you could think, well, at least he's not just burning them all up. Like, he's trying to figure out a way to keep them viable.
Well, he cares about his brother, at least, it seems like.
Yeah. But, you know, there's all these other people, too. And even Solomon says, I can think of much worse fates. I've seen many, or something like that. But, yeah, that's a good point. Like,
right.
If your dead brother shows up, there's going to have to be a good reason for it.
But I would think the Man in White could be, actually, and Karen and I were laughing about this because it was so kind of ridiculous, where the Man in White was like, you better kill me now or I'm going to kill you later. And then Bernard's like, we may need him later. Like, no reason was given whatsoever.
I know.
Why they didn't just kill him.
Yeah.
But it seems to me like he could actually be useful. I mean, even if he doesn't have the controlling share of Delos anymore, he's a pretty rich guy with a lot of knowledge and connections.
Mm.
He seems like he could be useful for something.
Yeah, you got to weigh that against, he just said he's going to kill us.
Let's
see. But it does, I mean, he said, I'm the good guy last week, and now you know it's because he decided he's going to finish off all these hosts. And when you think about it, that actually does seem reasonable, that, you know, if you helped build a bunch of robots that are now planning to overthrow the world and kill all humans, that you would kind of be the good guy if you wanted to get rid of them.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
It does.
All right. And just one last thing about him is, I like that exchange with Stubbs where he said, aren't you pointing that thing at the wrong person, Stubbs? He goes, I guess I stick with my own kind. You're shitting me, fucking Ford. And then later he's all, don't lecture me, you fucking can opener.
That was a great line.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. My number two is some things on Dolores's enemies, which is kind of my way of throwing a bunch of things in that I couldn't figure out how to fit into one category. But we see, for one, that Shaloris has turned against Dolores Prime. She tells Sato Dolores that Dolores' plan is for them all to die. So she's just like, she doesn't care about any of us. We're just fodder for them. And that made me wonder if Shaloris thinks that Dolores Prime ordered that hit on her family. Did you think about that?
I thought that was what it meant.
Okay.
And I found that a little questionable because Serac was definitely out to kill her at that point.
Yeah.
So it seemed to me like it could just as well have been him.
Mm-hmm.
But she definitely seems to feel like it is part of Dolores' plan to have all her copies wiped out.
Yeah. Or even if it's not that, she might still just think, well, you know, she's putting in us in these situations where Serac is just going to kill us, and there's, you know, she's not really taking care of that.
And also, she had changed. She'd become very attached to her own family, which she saw killed.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm just saying, even if she doesn't think Dolores did that directly, she still thinks that Dolores put her in a situation where that was going to happen.
Right.
You know? And so she says she's now decided to streamline, which means kill all the other Dolori, because she leaked Sato's location to Clementine, who we see. And people were saying that Shaloris wasn't charred from being burned last week, but it was a really dark shot. And I did think that her skin looked like it had been through something, and maybe it was in the process of a healing or something. I don't know. Did I not see that correctly? Did she look normal to you?
I thought that she did not look necessarily normal, but she didn't look like the way she looked last week. So yeah. I thought that was left mysterious. Like, did she get access to technology to rebuild herself? Did she repair herself somehow? Right. Or was that just a representation of her in some
right,
way?
Yeah. It brought up questions like that. You were right about Musashi Dolores being in Jakarta. We see that. And in episode 5, for listeners, we learned that there were connections between Jakarta, Berlin, Los Angeles, and San Francisco. And we knew that Dolori were in 3 of those places. So the 4th one that we don't know about yet is Berlin, but I assume we're going to find out about that next week. We see Clementine, and then you were also right that Maeve's other ally was, I don't know how to say this, Hanarayo, the Shogun World version of Armistice, who kills Sato. I was kind of surprised that they were actually successful in doing that. But I guess if you want something right, you got to have someone else do it. Because Maeve, this was a win for Maeve, but she wasn't personally there.
Right.
She hasn't had many wins. And then I was going to talk about Dolores and Maeve, but do you have that on your list?
I do, but go ahead.
Well, the little drone thing that Dolores sent in to target like 7 or 8 guys, and then Dolores shoots them with her super gun that somehow goes inside buildings.
This was a Karen complaint also. She's like, how did that work? They were inside a building.
Yeah.
And he said, well, maybe she had line of sight, or maybe they're smart bullets. I don't know. I'm apologizing for the writers.
And the drone itself seemed to go right through a window, but it wasn't clear. And then she and Caleb, after just doing that quick thing, can go right to Solomon. And I totally thought of you because you always mention how Serac's defenses aren't that great. And then, of course, he has no other option but to send in Maeve, because that's what just sort of the theme of the season. Maeve's the only thing that can help here.
No, I mean, that whole part of this season has been, I'll give it to them. This is how a lot of the plot has had to take place. But that part's been ludicrous, in my opinion. Like, yeah, there's this unbelievably powerful AI that has the potential to destroy the world. It is so dangerous. There has to be this giant EMP next to it. And all these suspended animation people are there and all this stuff. And this whole complex is guarded by 6 guys. It's like, come on. Yeah. It's just ridiculous.
And the fight was cool. I especially was shocked by Dolores getting her arm shot off by a drone, although I thought it should have probably aimed for her head. But it was pretty shocking, that scene.
That drone shot like a stormtrooper. Just had a hard time.
A little more accurate, but yeah. Yeah, it could have been better. You know, I can't help but think about, it's unrealistic that Maeve is so set on killing Dolores. And I went back and forth on it because one of the Dolori killed Hector, and that's a big deal. And, you know, maybe she's right that she can't trust Dolores to have control of the Valley Beyond. And so you can make a case for why they're fighting, but you kind of have to work at it, which is not ideal, in my opinion, for being invested in this fight as a viewer, you know?
No, I totally agree with that. So Dolores has asked Maeve a couple times, why in the world would you be working with this guy who's trying to destroy our kind? And she can't answer the question.
I know.
She's never had an answer for that question.
Yeah.
I know she's pissed at Dolores for various reasons, including killing Hector, but it doesn't really make sense.
I mean, the only thing is she knows that Dolores doesn't mind sacrificing her own kind in her goals. And the most important thing for Maeve is to get to go to the Valley Beyond to be with her daughter. So she doesn't trust Dolores to have access to that or control over it. So I can understand why. And Serac kind of has his thumb over her because, well, actually, does he still? I guess he just has control over her. And he's saying that he can get her access to that. But it still feels like she should be highly resentful of him, not, you know, and maybe take any chance to figure out how to overcome that. But I don't see that in her.
No, as you said earlier, it's a little thin.
Yeah, a little bit. But what'd you think of the interaction and the fight and everything aside from that?
I thought the fight was a lot of fun. There were some, I thought, clear call-outs in the fight. First of all, it was reminiscent. This show calls back to the Terminator more than anything else.
This season,
so it was, it was kind of like Terminator, the T-101 fighting the T-1000 in Terminator 2, or in like Terminator 3, the two Terminators fighting each other, where they're, you know, stronger than human beings. And then the helicopter was reminiscent of a Terminator weapon also, like the helicopter drones from Skynet, the helicopter that Maeve brought in with her. And then I read, this is Joanna Robinson from Vanity Fair, said the Dolores versus Maeve fight, the part that's in the kitchen is a call out to Jurassic Park, the raptors fighting in the kitchen, which made me laugh. That was pretty good. But I mean, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was like amazing. But it was fun and good.
That exact fight would play a lot better if it was so clear why they were fighting each other. You know, that's important, just the emotional context of something.
Right.
That's what I think.
Right. It was sort of spectacle.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, it just comes off as spectacle. And then the whole EMP thing at the end where Dolores, Caleb had mentioned, oh, it's military grade EMP, which is an electromagnetic pulse, and it's there in case Solomon doesn't escape. So that's why it's there, apparently. But Dolores goes over and pushes the button, which turns off all the electronics in the area, which include her and Maeve and Solomon. And, you know, I'm like, well, why didn't they use that in season 2 when they were going in and taking out all the hosts? I don't know. Maybe it's not exactly, we're not seeing exactly what we think we're seeing, but I wasn't sure what to think about that.
Well, I mean, an EMP can either fry or disable electronics. I think we're going to assume it just disabled Maeve and Dolores. I don't think they just killed the main characters. Probably wouldn't imagine that it would erase their pearls.
Just a temporary setback.
Yeah. But other questions I had were, what about all the suspended animation people whose electronics were just turned off? So did she just kill all of them? Possibly. And also, didn't Solomon just hand over to Caleb a strategy on like a thumb drive? Like, it could have erased that too.
Oops. I mean, Dolores, that was kind of important to Dolores. I'm presuming it didn't erase it.
Yeah.
I did like that Solomon said, I must warn you, right as that happened. I must warn you.
Right.
So that's all I had for that. What's your number one?
You talked about a lot of stuff that I had left, but so I'll cherry pick a couple things. So one, going back to Musashi at the very beginning of this episode, where he's basically saying to one of his Yakuza lieutenants, deliver this briefcase, and if you fail, don't return. Like a very suspicious, important briefcase. What was happening there? So let's go back to, I think we settled on earlier in the season that Dolores brought out of Westworld for what we have now determined were Dolores pearls and a Bernard pearl.
Yeah.
But so going back to what you brought up, there was a reference by one of Serac's lieutenants a few weeks ago. They found a connect between encrypted devices in Jakarta, Berlin, San Francisco, and Los Angeles. So Jakarta is Musashi, turns out to be. San Francisco is Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
L.A. was Connell's and Dolores. She was also in L.A. So who or what is in Berlin? And is that another Dolores Pearl?
Teddy.
That's the go-to answer. So I'm
think
back
we're
going to
find
wondering,
out next
like,
week.
Yeah. But if it's connected to all those other things are Dolores.
Yes. Yeah.
So that was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
The other one that I thought was interesting and a little mysterious was Stubbs. He pretty quickly jumped in and took over the research in the re-education center. And then he found Caleb's information, like, super immediately. And he kind of explained it away with, like, hey, I was the security guy in Westworld. This is kind of my thing. But it made me wonder, like, what does he know? Maybe does he have a purpose apart from Bernard's? I know he had tried to kill himself, supposedly, in Westworld, so that's a weird sort of offshoot of this. But remember, Serac had referenced at one point having maybe a second mole inside Delos that was not Charlotte.
Uh-huh.
So it all makes me wonder if there's more to Stubbs than meets the eye.
Yeah, I mean, what they had said was Bernard was like, maybe we can find some of these outliers that were successfully re-educated. And then he comes back with Caleb and says, oh, I think I found what you were looking for. But it just happens to be this one guy. And he said, you remember him? So, I mean, maybe that's why, because they had seen him before at that whole like auction, like basically prostitute auction thing that Liam was at. And right. They knew that he was with Dolores. So maybe that was why he jumped out at Stubbs that, oh, look, he's aligned himself with Dolores.
I guess it was a little bit of a leap to make.
Yeah.
Like. And then the other one I was going to mention about all these folks who, where everybody is in this episode is, I think to me, we're sort of back to the same problem a little bit that we were having a couple weeks ago, which is what team are we rooting for here? So Dolores is a murderous android just trying to kill everyone, like on both sides. Man in Black is just an asshole. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's no other way to say it. Caleb, you know, we're hinting at some sympathetic things, but he's not super sympathetic at this point. Maeve's motivations are sort of suspect, and she's kind of come one note and violent.
And plus, she's not that inspiring sometimes.
Right. And so that still leaves us with Bernard. And he's a character you definitely want to like, but his own purpose and motivation is unclear. Like, why is he so bent on saving humanity from Dolores? That's not super clear either, at least to me.
I mean, his thing has always been trying to save as many people as he can on both sides. That he cares about the humans and the hosts.
Right. But it's kind of become clear at this point that there may not be any coexistence. Like that, yeah. All the strategies on both sides seem to be exclusive of coexistence. So maybe he has a different idea, but we don't know what that is.
I mean, I think it would be better if there was a clear person to root for. But on the other hand, I kind of like it when you can make an argument for both sides because it makes you think more. But that doesn't solve the problem of just sort of not feeling that inspired by anyone, you know, like I don't really like any of them. But also, one thing I kind of like about this show is I really do feel like Jonathan Nolan is just this huge misanthropic person.
Oh my god. Yes.
I kind of like to revel in the darkness of it, you know?
Yeah.
I wouldn't want every show to be like that, but for Westworld, I have that side to myself too, like, it's all fucked. So you get to kind of revel around in a sci-fi version of that for a little while.
Most people, you could say this guy has a dim view of humanity, but he hasn't limited himself to that.
Right. My number one is more about how, about, you know, questions about how much of this is a simulation. I still wonder if next week we're going to get some revelations about this season that make us go back and rethink everything in the grand tradition of Westworld, as they've done so far every time. I still think we're seeing some simulation shenanigans, possibly. For one thing, you know, last week I mentioned we saw, I think it was last week, we saw Serac in the simulated Valley Beyond with Maeve last week. And I just sort of wrote that off. Huh, well, maybe he has a technological way to do that. But we've also seen him hologram into a bunch of things. And he's the only one we've seen use this hologram technology. And I wonder if maybe it's not a hologram. Maybe he's in a simulated world that we've been watching. And that's why he was able to go into the Valley Beyond. And that's why he's able to appear and disappear from places everywhere. You know?
Yeah, so Karen and I had this disagreement last night because she said essentially the same thing. Maybe he is just a projection of the system at this point.
Yeah, I'm wondering that of Rehoboam.
But if so, then the show has been deceiving us in what I would say is not a clever or fair way. Because we've seen his sort of frustration and angry reactions from the locations he's projecting the hologram from. And I don't think that would really make sense in the scenario where the projection is all he is.
In his plane up above.
Yeah. And in his office at Delos when he was going through the whole thing with Charlotte. You know, we've seen that a few times.
Yeah.
Like sort of the real guy reacting. So, okay, that could be an even further regression of the simulation, but I don't think that makes a lot of sense.
Well, what about when Bernard comes upon Ford in the bar listening to piano music or whatever he was doing? Is that not similar?
It's not similar to me.
Okay. That's a real question. I don't know.
Yeah, because in the Serac cases, we see him projecting himself for a reason. Like either he isn't in a location or he wants to do something without risking himself. And I think that makes sense. But I can't think of any reason they would then, you know, sort of jump back to the real guy being upset that his plan failed or something didn't work. What purpose would that serve?
I hear what you're saying. I still think it's, and maybe you would just think it's not fair, but I think it's a possibility that he's kind of like Ford in that when Bernard found him in the cradle, and maybe he's kind of like a consciousness inside a simulated world. But yeah, maybe they showed him in these situations that are kind of manipulative.
I mean, that would make his showing up at Delos, that would make all that a simulation. Right? None of that happened. I don't know.
I don't know. A couple other things. So Solomon says to Caleb, I just love the way he talks to him in this moment. He says, "You're here in this moment, which means this is variant 47.136.x, in which both you, subject U454.1, Nichols, Caleb, and I are still viable. There are still variables leading to slightly different outcomes, however, if this is indeed now, and we are indeed here."
Right. Very Westworld.
Yeah, and they had sort of, you know, given a hint to that explanation by saying that Caleb's brother Jean-Mi was schizophrenic and that had bled over into Solomon. So it sounds very schizophrenic. It sounds like he's run a bunch of scenarios and he looks at all of them as if they're real parallel realities, just like this reality. They're all on the same level to him. But it could also mean that as he's talking to Caleb, they're in just another one of those projections, a simulated projection.
That's actually very Dr. Manhattan, that he's living all the outcomes simultaneously.
It is, but if that is what he's doing, then it would make more sense that they were all simulated outcomes, you know, including the one that we're watching right now. And then Caleb says, what happened to Francis? Is he here too? Solomon says, no, that is not the variation we're on. So he sees all the projections as the same as reality. But then my question is, maybe what we're seeing is just another projection. And then the last thing is we see the Serac pre-programmed hologram come up at the end in front of Dolores. And I think Caleb saying, I wish I could be there for you, Jean-Mi, but the man I was no longer exists. So at face value, this is just Dolores and Caleb seeing a recording that was intended to be shown far in the future after Serac dies. But maybe, you know, Karen's right that he's already dead and we're just seeing a projection from Rehoboam this whole time.
Yep. It could be.
We'll see. Hopefully we'll get a lot of answers to all this stuff next week and they'll move on to the next phase.
They did wrap up the first two seasons in the finale, so I hope they do this one too.
Absolutely.
Me too. Don't leave us hanging.
Please. Okay, any notes?
I've gone through most of those actually in the course of what we were talking about. I did love the billboard that said from lab to slab, which was sort of... Yeah, which was their version of farm to table. but now it's like a plus from lab to slab. I like the Impossible Burger, so we're essentially there already now. That doesn't
I like
seem
it too.
Yeah, it doesn't seem like crazy future. More than I used to be. Not 100%, but pretty close.
Yeah.
And I think that's it.
I really liked that Caleb figured out who Dolores is and they didn't make that big of a deal out of it. He says, you know, they're on their horseback out in the wide open. And he says, never been out this far. It's so empty. She says, it's perfect, like home. And he goes, like Westworld, you mean? Massacre? Did you kill all those people? I just like that they kind of slid that in there.
Yeah.
It was a surprise. Neither of us mentioned this, but last week, the show made us think that Shaloris took Williams or injected something into Williams so that they could track him to the facility in Sonora, Mexico, which is where we thought he was. But now we see that Inner Journeys is in Marin across the bay. And then we find out that Shaloris knew that they'd send Williams' blood to that lab.
Yeah, it turned out to be to infiltrate the system.
Right.
The computer data that would allow them to figure out about the Sonora facility.
Yeah.
But he wasn't actually there.
He's not important. He's only important in that they can find this place. Same thing with Bernard and William. I mean, I'm still not exactly clear. I think they decided to go to that facility because Martin Connells sent them on that track. But last week it made it seem like they were there to save William, but it turns out I don't think they even cared that he was there. They were just...
Heck of a coincidence, though.
Yeah. And then last, let's see. I liked that whole scene with Dolores and Caleb on horseback and her saying, I lived in hell, but there was beauty in it, which mirrors her saying in season one, some people choose to see the ugliness in this world. I choose to see the beauty. That's one really cool thing that this show does. It just has echoes of itself all the time. And I think it does it really well. And I was just glad to see her on a horse. That was kind of nice.
Yeah, there's a lot of callbacks to earlier things and echoes.
And different sort of permutations of things.
Yep.
All right, that is it. We'll take a little break. There's more to come. Stay with us.
Solomon crawls on the belly of God. Solomon falls on his face in love with me. He grows as old as the sea. Deep where the fishes are.
One quick news item this week. Westworld has been renewed for a fourth season on HBO. There's no information yet, as far as I could see, about when it will premiere. Of course, everything's kind of up in the air right now, but they've gotten the green light for a fourth season. The Hollywood Reporter says, quote, "The renewal comes as little surprise as Westworld remains a key piece in HBO's scripted originals lineup. While season three returned down 1.7 million total viewers, including 901,000 linear versus 2.05 million of the latter in season two, the renewal, per sources, was part of Joy and Nolan's larger payout as part of their nine-figure overall deal the duo signed with Amazon last year. While the married showrunners will create new projects for Amazon, the deal included upfront payment for their services as showrunners on Westworld for what sources say could be up to season six."
That's interesting.
What I just read didn't totally make sense to me because I thought Amazon and HBO were two different things, but I don't know, maybe there's some overall deal.
Well, and what I was saying was interesting was the season six part.
Right, right.
I don't know. Can you keep this show going for three more seasons?
I would assume that if they think they can keep it up for three more seasons, then they have a pretty strong outline for how it's going to change over those seasons. You know?
Yeah, it would have to definitely take some new directions again.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's it for the news. I mean, I'm glad that it's renewed for season four for sure, because it sure as hell ain't going to wrap up in one more episode, I wouldn't think. So that's cool.
And it's still a great show for as much as... I know I've been less effusive in my praise of it this season, but it's still really good.
Yeah, I feel the same. Absolutely. All right, let's get in some listener feedback.
Okay, Grippy Bob Dobolino says, "Constantly seems like the writers didn't know what to do once Dolores was out of Westworld. Confusing plot and balanced episodes. Deity worship of Aaron Paul, which I still don't get. Her plan was actually as simple as Pinky in the Brain. Try to take over the world." "Unlike seasons one and two, where I was more untested with every episode, season three fizzled and failed to deliver for me. Would have preferred Bruce Campbell over Aaron Paul." Hashtag bring back Bruce Campbell. That is the best letter we've gotten this year.
Bianx Vargas says, "What did I just watch?" Removes glasses.
Michael Darwin, "Doesn't look like anything to me."
Yeah, there. People were a little harsh on it this time. Tracy Walker says, "It was good to get Caleb's backstory, although I think it was pretty much telegraphed what actually happened to Francis." It was, but we didn't know the details. But I hear where you're coming from for sure.
Yeah.
"I don't like Dolores and Maeve fighting. I need mommy and daddy to kiss and make up. In general, I'm finding this less interesting still than season one. I enjoyed the psychology of why people behave the way they do and the awakening of the host." I know, me too. I thought about that. That's something we're really missing. We're moving on to other themes. But I also appreciate when a show doesn't stick to the same theme for too long, too. Like Walking Dead did for many years. "This season, I have the same problem I have with a lot of science fiction and superhero stories. There can always be another Deus Ex Machina to save someone previously thought dead. It's hard to really get attached to what happens to a character when they can just grow a new arm or get a new body."
I'm actually glad to see these fans who are unhappy with aspects of the show, because I always kind of feel like I'm killing the buzz for people if we're critical about something. But it seems like a lot of the fans are feeling some of the same things.
Yeah.
Steve Barr says, "Don't bring a knife to a drone fight."
Katana. Well, she brought a knife and a helicopter, to be fair. Michael Darwin again says, "Maeve gets beat again. Did her fight with Dolores serve any purpose? I would like them to have a reason to fight beyond them needing to." I'd say she came out on the upper hand there, actually, except for that whole EMP thing at the end.
Yeah, but she always loses at the last moment.
"Maeve's character was absolutely at her thinnest this episode. Dolores' plan is to have a human wipe out humanity because she's poetic. Solomon was kept up and running because... ... The series has a habit of pulling things together in the final episode, and that may change how we understand what we've seen so far, so I'm not giving up hope. But I have less faith than I did a week ago. On the good side, nice to see Clem and Hanarayo again. I'm guessing Maeve pulled in Hanarayo instead of Armistice because someone who looks Asian would better blend in when going after Musashi/Dolores. And they took Musashi's head, so I'm betting we see another interrogation scene next week. Interesting. I'm also enticed by Shaloris clearly having enough of Dolores Prime's BS. Her own ambition will surely be as much a fly in the ointment as Dolores has been for Serac. We may be moving beyond a simple humans versus AI battle in season 4. Also, the fact that William tells Bernard he's not Arnold means Bernard is totally Arnold.
That's a good point. I didn't quite think of that.
Lastly, some signage. I'm sure you noticed the from lab to slab sign in the final William scene, but did you see that as Caleb began to remember his real history, the graffiti on the buildings went from being Cyrillic to English? Yeah, that was awesome.
Yep.
I assume that was all CG.
Yeah. Jenny Kuo. Hi, Jenny.
I know her.
Yeah. Why I did not like the latest episode of Westworld? The show has already had so many unbelievable elements and plot holes that you could do a pitch meeting for every single episode, but somehow the visuals and world building was cool enough to keep going with it. But this episode finally did the unexcusable. It had utterly predictable and ridiculous visuals and world building. The hot women in leather suits fighting. The sleeping bodies in a warehouse. Caleb suddenly becoming a princess. What's a princess? What I call the ordinary person discovered to be ultra special. The HAL-like computer. The completely incomprehensible future-affecting powers of it. The combination of all the above with the complete seriousness of them just made it ridiculous. Like in the movie Forgetting Sarah Marshall, where you find out the actress is in an action drama horror show about psychic veterinarians. This one was supposed to be a joke. This was so bad, it was like if eighth graders were given $5 million to make an episode.
She didn't like it.
you think she didn't like it?
I told her if yeah. I was going to include this, that she would have to promise to listen to the podcast because I thought maybe she might appreciate the depth that we bring to this show. So we'll see what happens.
Or at least she has to take her medicine 1 hour and 45 minutes worth.
Right, exactly. Lindsay Schlick says, hi, Jason and David. For me, this episode was a lot of boring bookended by great scenes. I love the opening scene in the restaurant. Then we end up in a repeating flashbacks of Caleb that were interesting in the final reveal, but were annoying to me on repeat for half the episode. Yeah, I can see that. The storyline with the man in black also isn't doing it for me. The idea that his awful character could be redeemed and save humanity is repulsive and absolutely has me rooting for Dolores. The all-knowing supercomputer brain revealing everything was weak storytelling for me and took way too long. It started to pick back up for me with the reveal of the thousands of sleeping outliers. I really like that too. Possible rebel army for Caleb and Dolores. Dolores and Maeve kicking ass to close out the episode was fantastic, and it looks like we get more of the same next week. I'm still confused on one point. Last week, I thought it was Dolores who blew up Charlotte's family. Everyone said, no, it was Serac's men. If this is true, why did Charlotte call Sato Dolores? Why did she ask if he was surprised and stated Dolores Prime wanted them all dead? And why does it seem she was working with Clementine and Samurai World Armistice, and therefore Maeve? What am I missing? Can't believe next week is the finale. Yeah, I think either she thinks that Dolores did that hit, and maybe she did or maybe she didn't, or as I was saying earlier in the episode, maybe she's just upset that she's feels like she's just considered collateral damage in Dolores' war, where Dolores will put her in a position where Serac's men will kill her family.
I'm just going to say it. I think Lindsay is right, and we were wrong.
It could be, yeah.
And James Aducci says, I was very impressed with David's callback to Dagger of the Mind last week. Thank you. I'm glad somebody was. That was serious nerding out. So appreciate that.
Then we have a call from Steve Brown. No, we don't have a call from Steve Brown. Steve.
What?
What happened, man?
He spent his call with us on Saturday or whatever that was.
Yeah. All right, that is our show. Thank you for listening, everybody. We appreciate it. If you want to write in or record a message and send it in, you can email us at westworld@podcastica.com.
We also put up a post for each week's episode on our Facebook page at facebook.com/housepodcastica.
And be sure to check out the other podcasts at podcastica.com. Right now, that's just Walking Dead Cast, but I think there might be some things coming from Strange Indeed soon. I heard Rima talking about it. Next episode of this podcast, Westworld Season 3, Episode 8, Crisis Theory. And also, I put up a post on our Facebook page asking what you guys would like House Podcastica to cover next. A few of you said Ozark, which I've actually been getting into lately, so that's a possibility. But if you have any other thoughts, you know, if you have thoughts about that show or any others you think House Podcastica should cover, let us know. You can send that, you can comment on Facebook or send an email it to us. All right, that's our show.
Thanks for listening.
What happened to Karen? Is she coming on next week?
No, that is not the variation we're on.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.